you know, when he gets into situations, gets into jams, the ability to pitch out of it has been spectacular. Obviously, when he's cruising and getting leadoff hitters out, that's always, you know, plan A. But when there's traffic out there against him, he really bears down and is tough. And we saw it today, first and second, nobody out. I think they had second and third, one out, another inning, and he gets out of it with a zero. So he just knows how to navigate and how to pitch when his back's against the wall. It's been fun to watch.
Well, that was Justin Turner yesterday after another strong performance from Jose Barrios in a 5-0 Blue Jays win over the Colorado Rockies. The Jays taking 2 of 3 from the Rockies. And Kevin Barker, the New York Yankees, coming to town for the 1 of 3 today, starting tonight. Given the instability in the Blue Jays rotation so far this year, and we could talk about a little bit about what we saw from Kevin Gausman on Friday, but also Yariel Rodriguez on Saturday. But that aside, given the instability in the rotation, my goodness, Jose Barrios' start to the year has been absolutely, absolutely vital, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When he's doubling up on certain locations with that slurve, he's doing that to glove side. That makes the arm side run on the two-seamer. I mean, you can call it a sinker. Sometimes he grips it a little harder. You know, he'll put more pressure on the middle finger, make it sink more into a righty, way to a lefty. Some of the times it has run, so he's got two different sinkers whenever he wants to throw those to arm side. Again, for me, we've said this, and I've asked this question whenever John's come on the show, and I've asked this to Pete Walker, the pitching coach, numerous times. How good is he when he is throwing certain pitches and is a tough take arm side? That's the thing, right, is whenever, because of his arm slot, that ball sort of moves to glove side. That's a way to a righty into a lefty, and he's a really tough take when that ball's close to the strike zone. That's why you can see him get out of a 22 first inning and a fifth inning, 22 pitches. Like, when he's able to do those kind of things and have that to sort of fall back on. I mean, it's elite stuff, right? He's changing speeds on the slurve now. I mean, that's sort of like he's toying with hitters. You know, he gets in sort of what Turner was talking about there. He gets into trouble instead of, like he would do in the past, you know, trying to muscle his way through it. It's not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. He's pitching his way by changing speeds, you know, getting some weak contact that way, making sure his misses are really good. And this is sort of the graduation effect for Barrios. We asked the question, can he take it to a different level? Can he be that low 3 ERA guy and sort of lead his staff? When he's pitching like this, glove side's good, changing speeds on the slurve, and sort of quadrants with the two-seamer. Now all of a sudden you're starting to see him elevate the two-seamer into a righty, away to a lefty when he gets the two strikes. Like, this is sort of elite kind of stuff, and good for him. Like, he's earned this by buying into a mechanical change, actually going out and executing it, and now it's just second nature to him. And he can sort of let adrenaline and heart rate and just stuff take over, and you're starting to see the results. It's pretty impressive. And, oh, by the way, he's 17 out of 27 throwing strike one. So he gets away, or he gets ahead a bunch of the times. He's very unpredictable 0-0. You know, he can backdoor that to a righty. He can throw the slurve. He can backfoot the slurve. Like, occasionally when he needs to, he can steal a strike with a changeup down and away to a lefty. So he's got lots of weapons to get lefties out right now, which is a big deal for him too.
Well, I was going to ask you that, Kevin, because we spent a lot of time in spring training talking about the cutter. And, you know, I don't think any of us envisioned him coming out and throwing the cutter a third of the time or anything. Like, he threw one of them yesterday. But can you explain to me how, even with that, so far this year against lefties, I'm just doing a quick look here, he's 2 for 31 with 12 punchouts. He's allowed a pair of singles to left-handed hitters. And, of course, yesterday, lefties were 0 for 8 with 4 strikeouts against him on the day. Is that just fastball location in your mind to the lefty? Is that the biggest reason we're seeing that turnaround?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's that. I think it is into a lefty. You got to speed him up in there. Joe Siddle does a really good job on the pregame show of talking about whenever Barrios is starting against the lefties is, how do you get him out? You got to speed him up, right? You got to get him looking in there with some good velocity and some late movement, and them thinking to themselves, uh-oh, I got to get the foot down a little sooner. I got to open up a little bit more if I'm going to get the barrel out in front and actually hit that baseball hard. And then that's why you start seeing him throw the changeup away. You'll see him back foot the slider occasionally. He'll backdoor the slurve. I mean, he's got two or three different kinds of breaking balls at two or three different speeds. So, yeah, he's toying around. Like, again, this is sort of what I think we were guessing. Could he do this if he made a little mechanical change? And I just think him being able to repeat that delivery over and over again and have the same release point. And you can see whenever he throws a bad one, right away I know how to fix it. I don't do it again so it doesn't escalate into what Turner was talking about, right? He gets traffic in the first inning, 22 pitches where he hits a batter, he walks a guy, Kirky has to throw an error. That's okay. I mean, I'll make a good pitch. We'll get out of this thing. And then you see the second, the third, the fourth. Now, he did have in the fifth inning, the 22-pitch inning, too, which, you know, again, it's certain parts of the lineup. You're trying to maneuver around. You're trying not to let certain guys beat you. And I just think that little mechanical change has given him everything now and sort of opened up the window of, I'm not going to let a lefty beat me because I have good enough mechanics to where I can make it look like a strike. And if I want to pitch around you, I can do it. And that, I think, is on the same page with your catcher, mechanics, mentally. Like, he's got it cooking, and good for him, because if they didn't have him right now with the way Bassett's been a little all over the place, with the way Gosman's all over the place, now Rodriguez, I mean, that is pitching with some serious velocity. I mean, that's a whole different animal if you can just sort of hone that in and, you know, get him attacking the corners instead of just trying to stuff everybody to death. You know, without Barrios, where would they be? They wouldn't be. I know they're still in, what are they, in last place still? I mean, they'd still probably be in last place, but it'd be uglier.
Mm-hmm.
I do think without him.
Let's talk about Yariel Rodriguez. He made his major league debut Saturday. The Blue Jays won 5-3, 3 2/3, 4 hits, 6 strikeouts, 2 walks, an earned run. I mean, he is clearly on a pitch limit. He didn't pitch last year. Your thoughts on him? We saw him in spring training, and now there's kind of an interesting contractual quirk with Yariel Rodriguez. The Jays only have options on him this year, so they can send him up and down as much as they want this year. Next year, they can't do that. He would have to go through waivers to be sent down, and clearly that's, you can't imagine that happening. So basically, this is, for this year, the Jays, they can do whatever they want to manage his innings.
Stuff's too good for him to be in the minor leagues. So you can throw that in the garbage, and he ain't going back to minor leagues. Like that. How many guys in that rotation have the stuff with the velocity that he has?
They'll still have to manage his innings.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do that 70-pitch, 75-pitch, you know, depending on how it looks. He's a Khakis dream. First time you see spin rate of almost 2,900 on the slider, like, Khakis are just drooling on themselves. Like that's basically what he is. And now he can throw the velocity with the fastball that he can to glove side and arm side, which is a big deal. We talked about this, especially early in the season. You get a dude that can locate into both sides of the plate, into a righty, into a lefty, opens up the entire strike zone. Because if I'm a hitter and I'm standing on the on-deck circle and I see my buddy, you know, who's ever right-handed or left-handed, getting sort of the ball in, and you see your buddy's first move is to open up, and then he starts spinning the slider, and then he starts throwing the sinker, which, you know, it's got power too, and he can locate that. It's just, how do you, with everything that's going on, because he is a big arm slot guy. Like, he'll drop down a little bit. He'll be a little taller. Like, I think they're trying to limit that a little because that will get him fewer innings at more pitches, which you don't want him to do.
You know what? It can be. I mean, Pedro Martinez used to do that. It can be a weapon. If you do it occasionally.
Yeah, I think.
With purpose, it can be a weapon.
I don't think you can do both. I don't think you can do the start, stop, start again, and also have repeatability with an arm slot if it's all over the place. I think that's sort of, I ain't trying to take it away from it.
Yeah, I know what
they're
you
just
mean.
Saying don't do it as much, right? And you'll throw more strikes, and instead of going, you know, 3.5 innings, maybe you'll go 5-plus innings, which is sort of ultimately what they want him to do, right, is sort of limit how many pitches he throws in an inning because the stuff's off the charts.
I was going to ask
really
you,
is.
After spending some time around spring training, watching him, and he's seeing bullpens, et cetera, et cetera. What's the biggest difference you saw from him in this game compared to what people were, what you saw in spring training or what people were saying in spring training?
Yeah, nothing. You know, I think again, it's just refining. Exactly. You asked me the same question when I was in spring training. It's everything before he releases the baseball. Like, he's trying to add some trickery, which when you got stuff like that, you don't always have to do that.
Right.
Occasionally you want to do that, give a guy a different look, maybe second time through, runner on second base, you're struggling, you give him a different look, change the angle of where you release the ball. Maybe your eyes, you know, as a hitter have to adjust to that, and you would swing at it when you normally wouldn't swing at it. But it is the slider staying arm side, which is what they want to stay away from. And that a lot of the times is where you're moving your arm, right? Consistently, if it's here and my body is used to it being here, I can throw it and have it end up where I want it to go. If it moves, then it starts to run. It stays in one spot, and it spins instead of breaking. And that, I say, is the spin rate thing, right? Instead of the floppy spin, because I've changed my arm angle too much, now if I stay in one spot and I repeat it over again and I can catch it out front, now that 2,900 RPMs, it's spinning. He throws it hard enough, so it's tunneling. Looks like the fastball. It breaks tremendously. That's what they want. They don't want it to stay arm side a lot. So that's why I think they're trying to hone in, not so much everything that's going on with his lower half, just the arm angle, right? Control the arm angle and all that stuff that you got, which is off the charts. He might have the best stuff of the staff. I mean, it is hot, which means it has late giddy-up. Just watch the hitters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lefties and righties. They were late on a heater that was catching a bunch of the plate. We'll tell you that whatever he's doing before he gets rid of it, it's working, right? And they're playing catch-up, and when they play catch-up, he can get away with these things. It's just, how do you get him deeper in games? Well, I think that's use the 70, 75 pitches to its fullest is what they're ultimately going to try and end up doing. But, man, I mean, it's just exactly the way it looked when I was standing behind. Because in spring training, you can basically almost be the hitter. That's how close you are standing right behind the cage. And just the sound was different. You could hear the actual movement of the secondary stuff, which is, this is what they were saying about this guy, is that's why they gave him some money, is because the stuff's off the charts. It's just sort of refining everything to turn him into what I think they want him to be.
Hard to do that at the major league level.
I don't think so. He's an older guy. He's 28 years old. He's been around long enough to you know, and I have talked to Petey about, you know, can you walk up to him and say, hey, stay on top of that thing, and he'll not give you a hard time for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's willing to make some changes. You know, not giant changes. You don't want him to not be who he is.
Right.
But I just think because of his age, he's been around long enough, he's already been paid, makes it a little easier
That's a great point.
You know, for you to sort of turn him into, again, they're not trying to take away all the things he does well. They just want him to repeat that stuff to have his quality of stuff last longer in a game, which will get him deeper in a game and them not have to use somebody they don't want to use. But, man, you can't argue that stuff, boy. I mean, it was coming out hot.
We are awaiting some news from the Blue Jays today, whether or not, Danny Jansen, Eric Swanson, Jordan Romano, the three guys who are down at AAA that we expect a couple of them at least to join the team, maybe even in time for tonight's game. Alek Manoah, this is what I was thinking of with Yariel Rodriguez's debut. If Yariel Rodriguez keeps this up, that gives Alek Manoah a little more time to try to get back to where the Jays need him. I mean, he does buy them some time, does he not? Because, you know, the reports, everybody, it's like everything else with Alek Manoah. Everybody seemed happy just because it wasn't a complete, total mess.
Yeah, I don't know what you want from Alek.
It was viewed as a step forward.
Like, what's the goal? Is it velocity? I mean, that's what you hear him talk about Alek. They love the velocity. Hey, okay. I mean, he's a sinker ball guy. Like, now you want to command that. Now you want to be able to throw it to a good right-handed hitter for a strike and not throw it down the middle. Can you do that to a lefty? Could you front hip that thing to a lefty and get a freeze? Can you throw your slurve, slider, whatever count you're trying to throw that in to a good left-handed hitter? Is he there yet? I mean, the video I saw, he looks in tremendous shape. I think the conditioning part of it, where he can repeat delivery and the arm speed on, you know, all of his pitches should be where he wants it to be. Now it's just mentally, can he get in his lanes consistently enough to be the Alek Manoah that I think they want him to be? Maybe not the one that finished second in the Cy or third in the Cy Young, but be
if he can just
good enough to give him a decent start.
That's what I was going to say. If he can come up and just kind of be a stabilizer, be the guy that is going to slide in very nicely to a fourth or fifth starter's role. Now, and this, I'm not going to make too much over Kevin Gausman's start to the year. I mean, he pitches Wednesday at the ballpark against
but you
at the Rogers
say
Center against Marcus
Stroman.
Something's
wrong with the arm. Something's up.
I don't know if something's up with the arm. Something's up with Kevin Gausman. That's what I'm going to say. I don't know if it's the arm. I don't think they'd run him out there if he wasn't healthy. I can't imagine they would run him out. I don't think Kevin would go out there.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's time. The people I've talked to said it's a bunch of timing, right? You know, you talk about hitters who get off to slow starts. The first thing out of their mouth is timing.
But what I'm saying is if that is going to be an issue for a while, you know, all this is important to have because there's a trickle-down impact, a trickle-down effect with Yariel Rodriguez. And if Alek Manoah comes back, that's just going to remove pressure off the bullpen. It's going to strengthen John Schneider's hand. Look, this team made the playoffs last year because its starting rotation stayed healthy, gave them innings, and they played great defense. That's why they made the playoffs, and that's how they're going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I just wonder if Yariel Rodriguez continues to take a step forward, whatever that step is, right? What would you do with Alek Manoah? What are you pitching him? I mean, he's a starter now. It's like Yariel Rodriguez. You're not disrupting that. That's why when we talked about this on Friday, you ain't sticking him in the pen.
Kev, is
Manoah any good in the pen?
Kev, you know what?
What are you doing with him?
I mean, this sounds like a cliche, but I think that'll take care of itself. If Alek Manoah is ready to pitch in the majors, they'll find a way to have him pitch in the majors.
Or you can have Tim May and you use that as a trade piece to get another bat in here. I mean, you can have too many. Like, and then you could run out of places to use them.
But the issue is, you know, it's like there were a lot of people talking in the offseason about trading Alek Manoah. That was just silly.
You couldn't.
You're not
even
gonna,
if you wanted to, you couldn't.
No, you couldn't. It's just silly. Yeah, what the Jays need from Alek Manoah is to see him back in the majors this year, stabilize where he is. See, I think this could be a good situation for Alek Manoah, to be honest, because he's going to have no pressure on him. The only pressure that's going to be on him is the pressure he's going to put on himself. No one's expecting him to come up here and be the ace. No one's expecting him to come up here and be the difference maker. Hey, if he's a difference maker in the summer, great. But no one's going to expect that.
Yeah, I may disagree a little bit. I think the rubber's met the road with that. I think it's very performance-driven now because of what their offense doesn't do. Like, you're a run prevention team still. You can't go out there and implode and think you're going to get four or five starts.
Nobody's going to come up here. Nobody's going to look at Alek Manoah as a savior, Kevin.
Nobody said that. I'm saying, like, let's figure out what he's got at the big league level. They're past that. It's win mode. Like, people are going to lose their jobs. They don't make the playoffs here.
We thought that last year, the person who did was Dave Hudgens.
You don't agree with that? You don't agree that they don't make the playoffs? People are not going to lose their jobs?
I mean, I don't know. I thought people were going to lose their – I've said this to you. I thought people were going to lose their jobs last year, and they didn't. I don't know. I don't know what the expectations are here. I don't. I mean, it's a different time. I talked to you about this a lot. How many managers get fired in season anymore? Very few. How many general managers get fired in season anymore? Very few. Different game now.
I think the way they use the rotation and how quick they are getting rid of people that aren't real good. I think that'll happen soon. You have to figure that would happen sooner than later. Like just right now because he's out of options.
Three months,
it's not been 3 months. I mean, he made the team because he didn't have any options and the waiver thing and how they got him and his stuff was playing up. I mean, that's sort of what it is, right? Early in the season, a little trickery, throws a little harder, think bats are not where they should be early in the season. You could get away with that. But, again, you've seen the offense. No?
Well, I want to flip.
The offense is sort of the same as it has been,
I want to flip over to the offense. Justin Turner yesterday, 3-for-4, 3 RBI. Justin Turner's been so good for this team. He's among league leaders. He's pretty much exactly – He's exactly as advertised, if not a little better. Question for you. Okay, you take 2 of 3 from the Rockies, 5-3, 5-0. You won the series, but is this – we talked about this in Blue Jays talk. I think we have come to the conclusion that this team's probably going to win more games 5-3, 5-2, 5-0 than they are 13-1.
Absolutely.
Have you seen enough from this team so far that suggests it can win games like that?
Yeah, because their pitching's good enough. And can we wrap a little bow on the pitching? Cabrera was much better. Location with the fastball, the secondary stuff. I mean, the cutter, and slider.
And we got to talk about
it. Well, I was going to wrap it. The cutter slider that Cabrera throws actually looks like a slider. I don't know why he calls it a cutter. Looks like a slider to me. His stuff just looked like rhythm and timing with his stuff look better, right? When he can go up and in for a strike to a lefty, we'll tell you he's where he's at.
And we know Pearson, John Schneider, by the way, just to reiterate, said in that afternoon game that he wasn't available. He was used twice in the Rocky series. Looked good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think the Nate Pearson, where's that been?
Like 102.
Well, not that's not so much as it is where he's pitching at 99 to 102. It ain't 94, 95.
No.
96, 97. It's 99 to 102. You do that, and he hasn't pitched a ton, and he can throw the hard slider and the slow curveball. I mean, it went from 99 to 82 to a lefty.
You know what?
That's a giant difference. When you got a guy that could do that, if he can continue to do something even close to that with the velocity on the fastball, I don't know how you don't use that a ton. But I wanted to put a bow on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, because I was also going to mention that Nate Pearson's outing, his last outing against the Yankees, where he struck out Aaron Judge, he hit 100. He might have been a little more than 100 with a couple of pitches. We talked about it. We weren't going to make a big deal out of it because we've seen Nate Pearson do stuff like that before. But he pitched really well against Judge and Rizzo in that appearance against the Yankees. And you're right. The last couple of outings, put it this way. We sat there and we said, all right, Romano and Swanson are going to come back at some point. Who gets sent down? And everybody was saying, probably Nate Pearson's one of the guys. Can't send Nate Pearson down now.
It would be tougher. I mean, if you continue
can't
to
send
see
Nate
this.
Pearson down.
It would be tougher to do that.
But you may have to make a decision today, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that's why the Mitch Whites of the world. I mean, those names will be, who would you rather have on your team, this Nate Pearson or Mitch White? I know what my answer will be.
Yeah, I would.
We'll see what their answer would be. Again, what do we talk about with the starting rotation? Bassett, Gausman is maintaining a consistent velocity on the fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Berríos, right? You make some mechanical adjustments. You get stronger with your lower half. You can repeat velocity so it stays the same over and over and over again. If Nate Pearson can do the 99 to 102, and I have to respect that because his secondary stuff's not great, but if there's a 15 or 16 mile an hour difference between the two, I don't know how you don't love that.
Our favorite sideline reporter has just tweeted out or sent out an X that Danny Jansen has been reinstated from the IL and will be active tonight. Brian Servin has been optioned to AAA.
Yeah. I mean, that bodes well for everybody. Alejandro Kirk might be the happiest guy in the room. I mean, let's not lie. Yes. Like, I don't know if his bat looked any quicker yesterday when he got the couple of hits, but it sure, after he had a day off, and, you know, it's sort of like that. I play a game, I have a day off. I play a game, I have a day off. Now with Danny Jansen here, who could carry the load behind the plate, maybe you'll get the best offense out of Kirk that you can possibly get. You mentioned the Turner thing. I mean, you dig in, Jeff, to what he's done early in the season, right? He's 39 years old. I think that's what we have to remember. Mm-hmm. He's hitting 379 off the fastball. He's hitting 302 off the breaking ball. He's hitting 800 versus lefty in 10 at-bats with four doubles. He's hitting 370 with two strikes, with six doubles with two strikes. He's pulling the ball more, which he's a pull hitter. Mm-hmm. His exit velocities have went up, if you're into that. The out-of-zone swing percentage is down, which is a big deal. The barrel percentage is up, which is a big deal. He's swinging less, which is a giant deal, because the reason why I brought that up is he mentions every time he speaks out loud to somebody that wants to ask, he talks about timing of the front foot. Yep. The front foot tells him everything he needs to know, right? Bat speed's there. That's why he's pulling the ball more. Swinging less means his eyes are not moving. I'm seeing the ball out of the hand longer, right? I'm getting to velocity much better, which means now because I'm on time, I can get the barrel to different quadrants out in front of the plate. I mean, if you're Vladdy, you walk up to Turner and you go, how do you do that consistently? Like, what are you doing that I'm not doing? Can you help me? Because I'm like 15 years younger. Can you explain it to me? I mean, that's some elite stuff.
I keep watching Justin Turner's at bats, and you know, first of all, I keep every time I see Justin Turner's at bats, I think of what must be going through your head because of the way, because he's basically everything you like in a hitter.
Absolutely,
he's everything you like in a hitter. Like if you were going to teach somebody to be a hitter, you would teach him.
Well, you can't really because of the way he's a collision guy, right? He makes no bones about it. I got three swings. I'm going to try to collide three times. Yeah, but you got to buy into that, right? You got to, you know, he's an older guy. He went through some struggles. It took him a while to find this Justin Turner. And now, right, because of the just the simple approach of no matter how high I kick it, if I get it on down on time and it's not long, right? He can't stride very long because if he does, barrel will be playing catch up, and he doesn't want that, right? He doesn't want the barrel back here. He wants it to come along with him so he can catch it out front a little bit more and then have all of those stats sort of be in the way they're supposed to be just because of his lower half and his mindset. And him hitting 370, having the same lower half, no matter what the count is if I'm Vladdy, I hate to bring Vladdy's name up, but when I have timing, Vladdy, on the ball in, maybe you should walk, maybe they have, walk up to Turner and go, how do you do what you do consistently? Am I standing in the wrong spot of the plate? Is my hands doing something they shouldn't be doing? Should I adjust my lower half to give me a better chance to maybe be a full-time pull hitter? Think right center to left field line. Stop trying to take 3-0 pitches dead to right field because I just don't have enough power to do that consistently with my lower half. Maybe walk up and have a conversation like that. I at 30, does he look 39?
No.
Unless you looked it up to say the actual number of his age was 39, you would never know that. It's just
he's a late, but he has said too that I am a late bloomer.
You know how hard it is on velocity, as hard as these guys throw, to swing slower. When in doubt, just calm down and have better rotation and think about if I add length with my hands, I have good direction with my hands and add length to it. My barrel will do the exact same thing and at least give me a chance to maybe not be 370 with two strikes, but at least give myself a chance. I mean, it sounds so simple, but to actually see him do it against these dudes that throw a bazillion miles an hour, I mean, it's elite stuff. I just doesn't grow on trees. So I thought it was time for us to give him love. And, you know, again, if you're anybody that doesn't know how to do it, maybe you should go walk up to Hibbs Locker and go, hey, can you sit with me for a while and help me figure out a little bit of what you're doing and maybe it'll rub off. Because I know if I walk by him, I'd be rubbing him all the time. Like, have a little of that rub off on me. Absolutely. Because it's elite stuff, man. It's, you know, age for him doesn't matter.
Very quickly, Dalton Varsho.
Yeah, look, I think
Grand Slam out of the lineup.
I don't think it's mechanical anymore. I think it's all about what you swing at. I mean, the two homers he hit were middle.
Were you surprised he wasn't in the lineup?
No, it's lefty. I mean, he doesn't have a hit off a lefty this year. Yeah. This is what they're going to do. Like, you can roll your eyes if you want.
I was surprised at how many people seemed surprised by it.
This is no offense to Dalton. He's not a good hitter, but he's a streaky home run hitter against the right pitcher, and that's why they're trying to throw him out there. If I go up there and look right down the middle, if I have to move in the batter's box to force a guy to throw, maybe make the target smaller to where I can get more balls down the middle so I can get balls in the air to the pull side, do that a bunch. And I said this, 25, 20 stolen bases, play elite defense in center and left field. I don't care if you hit a buck 80. Do you care? Drive in 60 runs. That's a really good season for him. So, good for him. I know he's a hard worker. He tries. He wants to contribute to the team. And it's good to see him finally get one. Everything works. It goes where he wants it to go. And he looked happy, which of happy Dalton Varsho makes me happy.
Mark Feinsand is an executive reporter or the executive reporter with MLB.com. He's also an MLB Network insider. He's author of the book, The Franchise: New York Yankees, A Curated History of the Bronx Bombers. The Bronx Bombers are in town tonight. And Mark Feinsand joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. The Yankees are in town today, tonight, for the first of a three-game series.
Hated Yankees.
I mean, I don't know. Luis Gil on the mound for the Yankees. Chris Bassett for the Blue Jays. I mean, I would put a little column in this on sportsnet.ca. Are they?
I think they are now.
I don't think they are.
They're not the most hated team in the American League?
No. It'd still be Houston.
You think so?
Yeah. Garbage can make.
I don't know.
You know what? We talk about how tough the AL East is, and it is tough. But where's the rivalry now? I mean, the Rays and Yankees don't like each other. I mean, you've got Kevin Cash and Aaron Boone that go back and forth.
Yeah, I think most of the East is too young to care about rivalry. That's what I think.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
That could be. Perhaps if Juan Soto resigns with the Yankees and we have to deal with Judge and Soto for the next 5 or 6 years, perhaps.
That'll do it.
That might do it. Let's bring in Mark Feinsand. He's an executive reporter with MLB.com and an MLB Network insider. He's also author of The Franchise, New York Yankees, A Curated History of the Bronx Bombers. He joins us in Blair and Barker. Mark, always good to talk to you. I mean, Kevin and I talked about this. We talked about this a little bit on and off. And actually, it was Ryan Spielborg's. We were talking this week about rivalries and just how, you know, we're talking about the Dodgers, Giants, and Padres seem to hate each other. There's teams in the Central that hate each other. But is there really that? I don't know if there's that edge anymore in the East. I got to ask you, though, if I'm the East and I got to deal with Juan Soto and Aaron Judge for the next 5 or 6 years, that might create a little bit of tension, I think.
Well, I think the one thing that's been missing in the AL East when it comes to the rivalries is you haven't had that sort of antagonist. You haven't had that player that other fans love to hate, right? I mean, Aaron Judge is a great player. He's also seems like a really nice guy, and you know, he's got the big smile, and it's not, you know, Derek Jeter was that same way, but Jeter had a little bit of an edge to him, and plus Jeter won all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the Yankees are winning the World Series every year, it's a lot easier for fans of the other teams in the East to say, God, enough of that guy. I hate that guy. Judge hasn't won anything yet. He hasn't been to the World Series. So, you know, you got to watch his chase for 62, which was more of a you know, sort of personal achievement, but it was in a year where the Yankees didn't get to the World Series. So at the end of the day, it didn't mean anything. I think Juan Soto is exactly the kind of guy that could make the Yankees sort of become that evil empire again with the, you know, all the shuffling at the plate, and he's got a little swagger to him. And, you know, I think he's the kind of guy who could really ignite other teams to look at the Yankees and be like, God, I hate that team.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the exact same thing. I mean, you know, God love the Orioles, but I mean, they look like a bunch of guys that should be baristas, I said today, or, you know, working at Jackson Holliday should be working at Baskin Robbins, handing out scoops of ice cream. Like, and Adley Rutschman's probably the closest thing we've seen to Jeter in this division in terms of poise and just, you know, almost elegance. I mean, I have a hard time hating the Orioles. Maybe that'll be different 3 or 4 years down the road, but I'm with you. I think Juan Soto
I think the winning is the key, right? I mean,
yeah, you know, that's
did
true.
Anybody give two bits about the New England Patriots before they started winning the Super Bowl seven times in all those years? No. Did anybody hate the Chicago Bulls before 1994? No. You know, when a team starts winning a lot, you'll start seeing it with the Chiefs now. There are going to be a lot of people who look at the Kansas City Chiefs and be like, okay, enough. I'm tired of that. I hate Pat Mahomes. He just wins and his life looks perfect and all that. You know, the winning is what makes it happen. And I think that's why, you know, I know when you compare it to droughts with other teams, fans will go, oh, boo-hoo, the Yankees haven't won the World Series in 15 years. Mm-hmm. But 15 years is a pretty long spell for that franchise. You know, when they won in 96, it was the first time in 18 years, which, you know, essentially means there's a generation of fans mm-hmm. that had never seen them win, right? I have two kids. They're almost 16, almost 19. You know, my one son was a year old when the last time they won the World Series, and the other one was 4. So they don't remember the 2009 World Series. So they've been Yankee fans their whole life. growing up in the New York area, but they've never seen them win the World Series to the point where they could actually enjoy it and celebrate it. So a 15-year drought for the Yankees is long for that franchise. People who are listening in Cleveland are like, I'll hold my beer. But, you know, I just think the winning is what generally, to me, makes a team really unlikable to fans in other areas, and the Yankees just haven't done enough winning in the last 15 years.
How hard is it going to be for the Yankees to make Soto work in terms of sticking around long term? Because listen, to me, I mean, it seems like a perfect fit. I thought it was a perfect fit when the trade was made. I like everything that Juan Soto brings to that team, the swing, all that, everything about him. What do they have to do, or how difficult will it be for them to make all those pieces fit?
If you put enough zeros on the check, it won't be difficult at all. I think Juan Soto is the perfect example of a guy who is hitting free agency at the end of this year at the perfect time, where sort of like Harper and Machado 5 years ago, where they're going into free agency at age 25, 26, entering their prime years. You're not having to face the idea of signing a guy to age 40. You know, we've seen a lot of those guys, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, the Robinson Canoes and Albert Pujols, who signed 10-year deals at age 31 or 32. And you knew you were going to have to sort of swallow hard and just suck up what the last years of those contracts looked like. These guys are, you know, Soto's entering his free agency going into 26. And unlike Harper and Machado, there is the belief that both the Yankees and Mets are going to be involved in this bidding war. So while Harper and Machado were looking around for the teams to write them the big checks, Juan Soto is not going to have to look very hard. And so I think, you know, he could love New York. He could love the Yankees. He could love the pinstripes. He could think they look slimming on him, and he loves hitting, you know, next to Aaron Judge in the lineup, and they could win the World Series, and everything could be the greatest thing in the world. Whichever team gives Scott Boras the biggest offer for Juan Soto is most likely going to be the team that gets it.
Mark, most surprising for you from the Yankees, they have a team ERA of 2.78, or Stanton leads the team in homers, Volpe leads the team in average. Most surprising, which one?
I think it's got to be the pitching. I mean, you know, let's not forget that, well, first of all, Stanton does lead the team in home runs. He has 4, and Soto and Judge and Oswaldo Cabrera have 3 each. So just, you know, if you told me Oswaldo Cabrera being in second place might be the most surprising thing of that group. But let's not forget, Stanton's a guy who won the MVP award before. You know, he's hit a lot of home runs for the Yankees. His question has been staying healthy. And, you know, 16 games into the season, it's hard to say, all right, well, he's proven that. Yeah. So, you know, not surprised that he's hitting the ball really hard when he hits the ball and when he's out there. I think it has to be the team ERA. I mean, when they lost Gerrit Cole, you sort of sat there and went, this team's in real trouble, because, you know, Carlos Rodon is coming off of a terrible year last year where he was hurt for half the year. Marcus Stroman, who they signed, you know, had an all-star first half and then just disintegrated in the second half. Nestor Cortez was hurt for the majority of last year, you know, and then you're looking at like Clark Schmidt and Luis Gil, and you're like, where are they? How are they going to replace Gerrit Cole? Well, to me, the three guys who were going to be the biggest keys to this team this year, because you knew they're going to hit. They have too much talent in that lineup not to hit. And last year when they weren't hitting, it's because Judge was out for 2 months and Rizzo was dealing with a concussion for 3 months. Stanton was a little banged up at times and they just didn't have their full lineup out there. But the rotation, to me, Rodon, Stroman, Cortez, were going to be the three to sort of determine whether this team could hang in there and stay relevant until Cole came back, you know, in June, possibly July. Well, Rodon's been excellent in his first 3 starts. Stroman's been excellent in his first 3 starts. Cortez has been a bit spotty, but certainly is going out there and giving them a solid effort more often than not. And the guys, the young guys at the back of the rotation are holding their own. So I think the starting pitching has to be the biggest surprise by far when you look at this team through the first few weeks of the season.
Every good team needs a surprise. Is Oswaldo Cabrera that for the Yankees?
No, I think Oswaldo Cabrera is a guy who they're just hoping can hold his own until DJ LeMahieu is healthy. And when he's healthy, he's, you know, I don't care how well Oswaldo Cabrera is playing, DJ LeMahieu is not going to lose his job to him. You know, Cabrera is one of those super utility types. They'll find at bats for him if he's still hitting well. and proving to be an asset to the lineup. But I don't think there's any, you know, if anything else, his play early in the season is giving the Yankees a chance to let LeMahieu get healthy and not try to rush him back because there's this big void in their lineup. I don't think anybody expects Oswaldo Cabrera, you know, to maintain an 880 OPS, you know, into June and July. But, you know, I think of it much like, this is one of the most random teams I ever covered. The 2013 Yankees had some real bad injuries early in the season. In spring training, they lost Curtis Granderson, who had been an MVP candidate before that, and they lost Mark Teixeira. And they brought in Lyle Overbay and Vernon Wells. I believe you guys have heard of those two. And it was sort of like, can they hold their own? And Vernon got out to a monster start in April. He had a bunch of home runs. He was hitting great. Big numbers. I think he drove in like maybe 20 runs in the month. And I was like, wow, can Vernon Wells hold this up for the year? He looks like his old, you know, Toronto form. And the point was they didn't need him to hold that up as long as Granderson came back. Granderson did come back. And then I think he ended up picking a pitch off his wrist and broke his wrist. And Vernon got thrust into everyday action for the majority of the season. And predictably, that performance went down. But I think the Yankees looked at Cabrera like they looked at Overbay and Wells that year and said, just hold your own. Just, you know, give us some production while LeMahieu's out, and then once DJ comes back, you will have done your job.
Now, Mark, I know he had a hand in some of the defensive miscues in that loss to the Guardians, but Anthony Volpe's been awfully good for this team this year. I think he's been in the leadoff spot, at least I've looked at the box score. A couple times. I believe he's been in the leadoff spot for four or five or six games. I understand he's made some adjustments to his swing over the offseason to try to cover more pitches. Like, are we seeing the emergence here of a guy who, look, I don't know if he's going to be their everyday leadoff hitter, but a guy who could be a legit star?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think when you look at what he did in his rookie year, everybody pointed to the 209 batting average, the 283 on base, and said, yeah, is this really a big time player? You know, is he going to have what it takes to be this kind of superstar going forward? But then you look at the rest of it. I mean, he had a 2020 season in his rookie year, played 159 games in an era where, you know, you hear about guys getting rest days all the time. Mm-hmm. I think he showed in his rookie year that the potential was there. He did have to make some adjustments to get that batting average up. And, you know, with a year of experience in the league and seeing some of these pitchers for a second, third, fourth time, that's going to help. Do I think he's going to hit 380 for the year with an on-base percentage approaching 500? No, of course not. That's absurd. But do I think he could hit 300 with a 400 on base? I don't think that's out of the question. You know, this is a guy who just a couple of years ago in the minors, you know, hit 294 out of 423 on base. So, you know, I think he's proving that the biggest thing people worry about with young players in New York, especially with the Yankees, is can they handle the heat, right? When people are looking at them and the home fans are booing them and the papers are killing them, how are they going to react to that? Well, he went through a lot of that last year, and he showed that he was not fazed by those things. So I think the fact that he's come out and gotten off to a great start this year can only help him, because if he goes through one of those bad slumps, then every player, not just every young player, but every player is going to go through that 2-for-20 at some point during the 6-month season. But now, instead of that 2-for-20 dropping him down to a 185 batting average, it may lower him to the low 300s. And all of a sudden you look up and you still feel pretty good about your season as a whole. So I think this kid has the potential to be a star in New York. He won a Gold Glove in his rookie year, put up a 2020 season, and most people looked at it and said he's just barely scratching the surface.
Mark, really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Anytime, my friends.
Take care. Mark Feinstein is executive reporter with MLB.com. He's an MLB Network insider. He's also author of the franchise New York Yankees, A Curated History of the Bronx Bombers. The Yankees in town for the first of three tonight against the Blue Jays at the Rogers Center. It will be Luis Gil for the Yankees, Chris Bassett for the Blue Jays. Second time that the Jays have seen Luis Gil. Do you expect to see a change in approach, or can you have a change in approach against a guy who throws this hard?
Yeah, look, I think the velocity, they've seen so much of that, it shouldn't matter. Should they make an adjustment? Absolutely. Like, again, it's about your direction of your hands, right? There's a reason why, because he has a three-quarter arm slot or almost a sidearm release point, that ball's going to run naturally, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to know that just by watching the guy on the on-deck circle or watching the guy in front of you or what he tried to do to you last time, right? It's like Vladdy. It's the four-seamer away. It's the changeup in. What's Vladdy do because he wants to get the ball in the air to the pull side? He opens the front side up. The barrel all of a sudden looks like alligator arms. It's not in the zone long enough. That's why he hits the ground ball, because he's got lean back. He's just the opposite of Turner, right? That's the thing is, you would hope by just seeing him and knowing what I just said that they could simplify it, make an adjustment before they go to the game. But anything that's ever told you that 1 through 9 they're capable of doing that?
No.
Then that's your answer.
But let me ask you this. When they were facing Logan Gilbert, we talked about be ready to hit.
Yeah.
Right? Get up there, be ready to hit.
Yeah.
Now, this is a guy who throws hard, but he also issues a lot of walks. So I'm asking you, is your approach against this guy different?
Yeah, now Logan Gilbert's 6'6", and has a release point of like 7 feet, right, 8 inches.
Understood.
Which means the ball looks like he's releasing it.
Understood.
Basically right in front of you. That's the difference. That's why I said, you know, even if you want a two-strike approach, which they would never do, because they're trying to get frisky and have party out front, they're never going to do that. But that's why you would do that, right, is because it just looks like it gets on you, and his 96 looks like 196. That's mm-hmm. That's why I was saying this. This guy has natural run because of an arm release of where he releases the baseball, and he throws changeups into righties on purpose.
Yeah,
like you should know that.
He's added the changeup.
No, it's 90 miles an hour too. It's not like it's 88 or 86 or 85 miles an hour. There's not a giant difference between his fastball. That's what I said. Be ready to hit and add length to your swing, which will give you a good path with your hands. That's what Justin Turner does. And when in doubt, don't swing hard. Like those are, at this level, you've seen enough hard throwers to, you should know how to do that by now. That's why I said, that's why if you're a fan of Vladdy's, very hard. It's very frustrating to watch that. It's very frustrating because it's like Groundhog Day. Why do you think he's swinging at 3-0 pitches away? Because he don't like the ball in. That's his approach now, is he thinks mechanically, with his rhythm and timing, it will be better on the ball away than on the ball in. Instead of just saying, I'm going to give you that, if you throw anything inner third to outer third, I'm going to hit that thing to the moon. But instead of that, he tries to cover everything because a lot of people around him are not hitting, and it's just a lot happening there. So a long-winded answer to your question is, I'd love to say the answer is yes, but in the past, what they've shown you and us, the answer probably will be no. There. Did I?
Yeah, no, I wondered because it seemed to me that in his last start, in a start against the Jays, there were times where you kind of thought they might be getting him. And now that was an odd game. Remember, he was called for there were a couple of pitch count or clock violations. There was a lot going on in that game, if you remember.
He's a thrower, not a pitcher, right? And again, this is a league of adjustments, right? Last year to Vladdy, it was hard in, soft away, right? He'll chase both. Now it's soft in, soft away, and then you'll occasionally throw the hard stuff up and away. So they've adjusted, right? Because they think maybe he'll adjust. They're going to adjust, right? But they make the adjustment with different speeds. Mm. And now at the big league level, he can't cover the entire thing, and most can't. Split it in half, pick one side, live or die by it. If you do that because you have talent, most of the time it'll work out, and just consistently a lot of the times. That's why you get a lot of lean back from Vladdy, right? You're seeing a little bit of that with Bo, too. Bo's having trouble with the breaking stuff and the off-speed stuff. He's in a hurry. Right? I hope that's not because of what he said to us, where he's saying that now he's going to try and hit more homers. I hope that's not the case, and that's not the reason why, because he's not that guy, right? Because he thinks, okay, I could probably make $125 million doing it this way instead of $80 million being Bo Bichette and leading the American League in hits. I hope it's that one,
yeah,
and
I
not
think,
that first one.
I think Bo Bichette can make all the money he wants being
being Bo Bichette. Buck Martinez is Sportsnet's Blue Jays analyst. It's Jays and Yankees from the Rogers Center in a few hours. Buck Martinez joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
.707 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. The Jays and Yankees open a three-game series at the Rogers Center. Reminder, Wednesday's game is an afternoon tilt. Mr. Barker, et moi, will be along to do Blue Jays talk following these three Yankees games. Then they go off to the West Coast, and they're off to San Diego, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Take on the Padres. Do you see any of the Padres-Dodgers series?
Yeah.
Teams do not like each other.
No, the Padres are grinding too. Which is when you have talent and you grind, they're going to be a handful.
You get the impression that I watched a bit of all three games. You get the impression they're just kind of chapped at the way the last 2 years have gone. The Padres,
maybe.
I think it's kind of caught up with
them. I think they have a lot of talent. It'll sometimes live up to your talent and. Sometimes that takes grinding. You know, if you have to choke up two strikes.
I tell you, it's a hell of a series when those two teams play, man.
Yeah, I think
it really is.
They both spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
Start winning.
It's fun to watch. Buck Martinez is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. He will have the call of the game tonight along with Dan as the Jays and Yankees open their three-game series. Buck, thank you for joining us. We know now that Danny Jansen has been activated. Brian Servin has been sent down to AAA. No indication yet as to whether any relievers will be activated today. Buck, thank God for Danny Jansen. I can't put it any other way. I'm sure a lot of people are saying that.
Yeah, I think everybody feels that way. Danny's turned into a heck of a player and certainly a big presence behind the plate, and now he's understanding who he is as a hitter. So, yeah, it's a welcome return for Danny Jansen. And, you know, Alejandro Kirk caught an awful lot early in the season, and I'm sure he'll be happy to see Danny back as well.
I was going to ask you about that. Do we know anything more about Alejandro after seeing him? You know, he's had to do this in the past, but right from the get-go, out of spring training, you're the guy because Danny Jansen's hurt. We don't know when he's going to be back. Basically, here's the workload, run with it. Did we learn anything good or bad about Alejandro from how he handled this?
Yeah, I think it just shows the rigors of catching every day. The position has become a two-man position in this game today. And I think he's probably better served, maybe catching twice a week and let Danny catch the other games. And I think that's probably the best combination right now. But, he did a good job. Pitchers like throwing to him. He's improved his throwing right now, but, you know, as you guys know, he hasn't had an extra base hit yet. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Jays overall haven't had much production from the catching spot. So they will certainly embrace Danny when he gets back.
Buck, let's stick with the hitting. Justin Turner, I mean, the first time I saw him in spring training, obviously I've seen him play on other teams and, you know, with the Dodgers and the Red Sox. But seeing him up close, just the approach never changes. Like, it's the simple approach, right? If I'm on time with my front foot, that'll direct my hands and the barrel end up, and it'll at least give me a chance to hit something hard in the big part of the field. I wonder if that's contagious. Do you think the guys around him, say like a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who sometimes overswings on certain quadrants of the strike zone. If I'm Vladdy and I'm watching that, do you think they're capable, Buck, of saying, man, maybe I should slow it down a little and just trust myself that I'm good enough with everything that it takes to be a good hitter, that just let the barrel go where it goes? You think they're capable of doing that?
Absolutely, I do. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of that influence. And, over the weekend, you saw several chimes in the dugout to Edwin Encarnacion visiting with Vladdy during the game. And, you know, his presence is important. Justin Turner's presence is important. And Justin's had a big voice in the hitter meetings. And he suggests all these kinds of things. And one of the things he said about Vladdy early on was, he doesn't have to swing so hard.
Yeah.
Do you think Vladimir Guerrero is stronger than Justin Turner?
Yep.
I would say so. Mm-hmm. But Justin is so much under control. I think if you watch him, and, you know, when you watch great players on a daily basis, it's like the light goes up. Oh, I don't have to try to hit it so hard. I just have to try to hit it squarely. And you saw all day long yesterday, Justin Turner was in total control of his at-bats. The pitcher was the guy that was in trouble, and he was rewarded with three great RBI at-bats.
Okay, Buck, you're a catcher. You see a great hitter like Bo Bichette struggling a little bit with off-speed stuff. What's that tell you about that hitter?
Keep throwing off-speed stuff.
That's a good one. That's probably why you played forever.
That's what I would do. Yeah. I mean, you know, here's the thing that we used to think about this all the time as a catcher. Throw the pitch until the hitter makes you change.
Yeah.
And nowadays, everybody throws every pitch to every batter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they have a weapon later on in the game after you've thrown all of your pitches to one batter in a particular at-bat, especially in the first at-bat. They pitch them like the bases are loaded and there's two outs in the bottom of the eighth every at-bat. You got to save some pitches. You got to use your pitches wisely. And you got to say, okay, let me throw fastballs now. It's a nothing-nothing game. I'm just going to throw fastballs and move it around a little bit, see if he handles it. If he handles it, then I'll go to the next pitch and come up with a different plan. But I think when these guys go into a game right now, they have a script. I got to throw this pitch and this count to this guy, and if I don't, he's going to hit it. And, you know, it's just, it just doesn't work that way.
Buck, you mentioned saving pitches. I saw Nate Pearson pitching at 99 to 102 miles an hour, throwing the slider, throwing the slow breaking ball. That's called pitching. I saw him go down and away with 99 to a right-handed hitter. Like, he was trying to do that. Not because he just ended up there. Like, that's where the catcher set up. They called it there. I hit that spot. Do you think he can continue to do that? Because, Buck, if he can do that and maintain that velocity, he can get away with some bad secondary stuff, you know, and still have a good outing. Do you think we can continue to see that, Nate Pearson?
I sure do. I think that's the best version of Nate Pearson you can get right
Absolutely.
There. He didn't try to overthrow. He can touch 99 and 100 with a good delivery. He threw a pitch 102 miles an hour and pulled it way out of the zone. And then he made the adjustment, said, I don't need that much effort. I only need this much effort. And I think it's just like hitting, Kevin. If you understand, when you hit a ball really hard, and I'm sure you did this in your career, you went, man, I didn't even swing at that ball, and it jumped. Well, it's the same with a golf swing. It's the same with a pitcher. It's rhythm, balance, and timing. You don't have to muscle up on every pitch. If your timing is right and your foot's down and your hand's out in front, the ball will come out of your hand, and it'll jump out of your hand, and you'll have more control with it. I was so proud of Nate yesterday. Yeah. I thought that was the best version of Nate Pearson we can get, and now he's got to understand what that felt like, and how can I repeat that every time I go to the mound? Because you don't have to be any better than that. Mm-mm. You just have to be that every day.
That's well said. Buck, with Romano and Swanson due back at some point, what do you do with Nate?
Oh, you keep Nate right in the middle, because Nate can give you two innings, and Nate can give you, you know, here's the thing, Jeff, that if you have a series, say you got a series against the Yankees next 3 days, right? You got two games at night, one game in a day. I think this is where, when they're at their full strength complement of relievers, they have the types of pitchers that you can use throughout the three games. You can use Jimmy and Chad in one game, and Swanee and Romano in another game, and Nate and Meza in another game. And oh, by the way, let me tell you, Tim Meza had a great outing as well. He's back to being Tim Meza again. So all of the things are looking up down in that bullpen. And I don't want to forget Trevor Richards, because he's so important in this bullpen. But when you have Nate Pearson there, he can bridge innings. And I think, too, with Bowden Francis now apparently working out of the bullpen, he's a guy that can come in, get you out of an inning, and maybe give you two more until the offense comes around and scores you some runs. Then you get ahead. Then you go to your guys at the end, like, I mean, Garcia, my goodness, is he throwing great or what? Mm. Chad Green is throwing great. Nate's throwing great. Now you get Swanee and Romano up to speed. You know, it's going to take them a couple outings before they get back up to speed. But at the same time, you can pick and choose their spots and bring them back in a timely manner so they do get up to speed quickly.
Are you worried about Kevin Gausman?
No. I asked him yesterday, I said, are you going to still pitch? No, I'm not worried about Kevin Gausman. You know what? Kevin's a little bit older now.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's 33, and he didn't pitch much in the spring. And, you know, these guys that you just can't crank it up. And I understand why he didn't pitch, and, you know, he couldn't control that. But at the same time, it takes some outings to get it all together. The rhythm, the timing, the release point. Just like Chris Bassett last time, he threw 115 pitches in his third outing, and he was real good. So all of a sudden, he has the feel of making his pitches. And there's no more touch and feel guy in this rotation than Chris Bassett. So, you know, I expect him to go on a little bit of a run right now the way he's throwing the ball.
You know, Buck, we had a caller in Blue Jays talk about a week ago, and guy from Minnesota, big Jose Berrios fan, loved Jose Berrios when he was with the Twins, big fan, follows him, watches all his games on TV, all his starts. And he asked us a question. He said, he's always thought there's another level for Jose Berrios to get to. And he said, do you guys ever see him turning into an ace, turning into a guy who was the acknowledged number one guy in a really good staff? And, you know, we both kind of said, well, it's kind of early and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'll ask you this. I think we're seeing him go to another level, don't you?
Absolutely. I said this a couple of games ago on the air. I said, in an open, I believe, I said, I think Jose Berrios is going to be in the Cy Young conversation this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I, not only because of what he has done to start, just his body language and the way he controls things. The other day, there was a replay at third base, and IKF made a tag, and he was out, and they called him safe. And it was second and third with one out. Berrios just grabbed the ball and says, I got this, man. I got this. He got the guy to pop up, struck out the next guy, and stranded two base runners. He is so under control. You talk about Justin Turner having control of his at-bats.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Berrios has control of his at-bats as well from the mound. He's in a great spot right now.
What do you think of Yariel Rodriguez so far? First start.
I love him. Yeah. I loved him the first day I saw him.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
He's a pro, Kevin. You saw him take pitcher's fielding practice down there,
yep.
And he picked up the ball and fired it like he was in the middle of a game every time he had a play. You know, and that's the impact of playing in Japan for 3 years. They are so demanding in their fundamentals and in their drills, it carries over to him. And I spoke to him yesterday through the interpreter, Tito LeBron, and I told him how proud I was of him, of the game, but more importantly, of acknowledging the fans when he walked off the mound.
Yes.
I think that's something that's lost on players today. All the fans want to do is acknowledge your great outing and how much they appreciate it, and it's a simple gesture. Just tip your cap, wave to the crowd, and they will love you forever. And he did that. And you know, I just think he's got all the weapons to be a terrific starter. I think it's going to be a slow process. I don't think there's a hard and fast number of innings. I think you're going to have to read what he does. He told me specifically, he said, you know, the last time I pitched a full season, I was a one-inning pitcher. So it's going to take him a while to build up the stamina. But you've seen him, Kevin. He's a big, strong man. He's really well built. And I think he can stand up to the rigors of being a starting pitcher in the big leagues.
Absolutely.
Buck, what's your read on the Yankees so far?
They're good. They're good. You know what? And you know what they have? They have something they haven't had for a number of years. They got swagger.
Mm-hmm.
With Stroman and Soto and Verdugo in left field, they got a lot of swagger, and they believe in themselves. And now Volpe has made a change in his swing. He's cut his whiff rate down. He's let off the last four games, and, you know, they're pretty good. The only concern, if I were Aaron Boone, is the health. You know, some of their key players are a little older. Aaron Judge is running around an awful lot in center field as a 6'7" center fielder. But, you know, Juan Soto's defense in right field is a little shaky. But if they had a plus-minus, he'd probably be plus because he's so good a hitter. But, you know, they can make defensive changes if they need to, but you want his bat in there all the time. And, yeah, they're good. And, you know, obviously they miss Gerrit Cole. But, you know, I think they've got the personality to overcome it now because Soto and Verdugo and Stroman, of course, we all know what Marcus is about. They all believe that they're as good as anybody in the game.
They've also got, I believe, five players among with the highest walk rate in the AL, five of the top 10. What type of a challenge will they present to Chris Bassett tonight?
He's got to throw strikes.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's just, you know what? The walk rate, it's good, but you know why they walk? Because they're good hitters. They take pitches because they're good hitters, and they know that if it's not there, you've got to take it. The Blue Jays are doing that.
Yep.
But the Blue Jays haven't squared up the pitches when they get them yet. They're just a little bit off in their timing, but the Blue Jays are doing a pretty good job of pitch selection. They're not chasing a lot of pitches. What they've done is they've missed the pitches when they get them into the zone. And you heard Justin Turner in the post game yesterday. Arden asked him, "So what do you do at the plate in those situations?" He said, "I shrink the strike zone." That's a great phrase. He shrinks the strike zone. Yeah. So he makes the pitcher come into that little tiny box that he's looking for. And he hasn't missed it. And I think the other guys have started to shrink the strike zone a little bit, but they've missed some pitches when they've had the opportunity. And, you know, it's what we got, 45, 50 at bats in. They're going to have 650 before the season's over.
Yeah, hunting windows, you can't teach it. Buck, I got to ask you about the ballpark. How's it playing? Right field, the ball look like it's carrying there. I know there were, you know, some talk, the players that I was talking to in spring training about last year, and, you know, when you lay into one. I think Vladdy made a swung at a 3-0 pitch at a fly ball to right. It looked like he thought he may have got it. It didn't go. Any rumblings about, you know, disappointed about the way the ball's carrying there?
There's always rumblings about the way the ball is carrying. No matter where you're playing. Now, I think the biggest thing for me is, and Loon Chong mentioned this to me, he's assistant trainer. He mentioned this to me last year, and I thought it was pretty insightful. He says, you know, they closed the gap over the fence with the renovations last year. And that used to create a little bit of a wind tunnel. And they closed that gap a little bit. The only place there's a gap is in that space in center field behind Kevin Kiermaier, where the fence is a little bit lower, and there's a little gap in there in center field. But they've closed the gap, and I don't know if it has, you know, affects the airflow. But I think, Kevin, one thing that's true with any ballpark is when the home runners hit them, they're home runs.
Yeah.
Home run hitters hit the ball, they're home runs. When the little guys hit them, they might be fly ball outs. But, you know, if you hit it good, it's going to go out. I don't care where you're playing.
Yeah.
Buck, really good of you to do this, man. Look forward to seeing you down in the park tonight.
You're the best, Buck.
Thanks, man.
Should be a good night, fellas. Yeah. See you later.
See you, buddy.
Buck Martinez is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. And he had, I mean, this is, he doesn't need me to say this, but he and Danny working Yariel Rodriguez game.
Yeah.
Was tremendous. You could tell Buck's you can tell Buck's excitement when he acts, when he sees something that is really like just really impressed him. And he was
It doesn't come around every day. Like he was doing it with, like, he is the 2024 version of a pitcher that everybody dreams of. Like the khakis are dreaming of spin, right?
That big. He's a big man.
I think that's why, you know, you're sort of, when you watch him, you know, see how he walks around. Mm-hmm. Like, he understands that he can lean on his body type. Like, it's, you know, when in doubt, I can muscle through an inning if I have to. I can muscle through an at bat just because I'm a big guy. I'm mechanically sound enough. Like, I can change angles with my arm slide. I don't think they want to do that a ton, but he can do it enough to get through a certain at bat, a certain pitch, you know, where he wants the ball to end up, those kind of things. You know, I love it. Like, the first time I saw him, just, you know, the start and stop, I don't dislike that. Like, I think he can do it enough because of his age. I just think he's been around long enough to understand that, you know, if he, when he starts it, don't stop it too long. Start it, like, keep it in rhythm enough to, you know, the timing out of the glove, as long as he's getting it out on time and it's not in a hurry, or, you know, it's sort of, you know, he's separating it. He ain't pushing it or pulling it out of his glove. It'll end up where he wants it to end up, and he can get people out. So
I wonder, Kevin, though, if something Buck said, if this maybe ties into the stop and start, the fact that the last full year he pitched, he only pitched an inning at a time because he was a reliever. You might be able to get away with that as a reliever, the stop start. I don't know if you could do it as a starter.
I think
second or third time through in a game, second time through, wouldn't you be able to
I think he's, you know, wind up, that's if he's a starter. Stretch, that's if he's a one inning guy. Like, I'm not sure he's using a, you know, using the windup all the time if he's a one-inning guy, those kind of things. Like, you can, you know, you want deception. That's what the windup gives you, right? You're trying to disrupt the timing of a hitter by doing all that stuff. You know, obviously you ain't going to do any of that out of the stretch. So, you know, he's got different parts out of all that. I think that's sort of who he is. And this is the, you know, this is sort of what Petey's going to have to work through, the pitching coach. He's going to have to work through what's best for him, what's best for the team, and not take away what he does really well, right? He obviously feels comfortable moving the arm angle around and starting and stopping. So you don't want to take both away, but you do want him to be able to throw, you know, strike one with a slower pitch, be a little bit more unpredictable. You do want him to be able to, second time through against a tough lefty, do something different with his location, because you can. Like, that's, I think that's one Petey was talking about him when he came on our show. That's what they, I think, want to refine. It's just, when you see him more than once, how does it look? Can he adjust and give you a different look? Because he can, not because he has to. Right. That's the big difference. That's the difference in Berríos. That's the difference in Yusei Kikuchi. Like, those are two guys. Refine it so you can make it look different because you can, not because you have to. And that will take you to a whole different level. Stuff's off the charts. I mean, he's powering through stuff. Like, he can throw it to you in a fastball count, which is not a ton of those, because of good location, because of good movement, because it has good late giddy up to it. Like, it's getting on that dude the last 4 or 5 feet. So, yeah, I know Petey really well. He's over there licking his chops. It's like Christmas morning. Boy, what do I do with this thing? Look at that coming. It's coming out hot. Now we can just do little things to make him that much better and use the 75 pitches or whatever that number is to his fullest, right? You want to maximize that. And the less pitches he'll throw in at bat, the less pitches he throws per inning will get him deeper into a game.
Is there a percentage fastball use you'd like to see from him?
I mean,
out of 75 pitches.
Yeah, 60-40, I think, would be because of how hard he throws, how much it moves. But I don't think he's that guy. He likes spinning it. He knows he's got a good slider. Like, he wants to spin that thing a lot. And he knows he's got a good breaking ball. Like, he knows he's got a good split finger. Like, he wants to throw the split finger to lefties. He wants to throw the slow breaking ball to lefties. He wants to throw the slow breaking ball to steal a strike. Like, he wants to maneuver it around the strike zone. It's just, can he do that? And I think that's sort of where they're at with him, right? And, you know, you and I think Joe Siddle was saying, did they rush him? Or is this the right place for him? And I say, stuff like that don't grow on trees because of his age. If he can do it, call him up here, because you'd rather see it here than you would see that in the minor leagues. So.
If I've got, I mean, I'm with you on that. If I know that I've got whatever that number is of pitches, and if he's comfortable doing it, which he clearly is, like, he didn't sign this contract to pitch a full year in the minors.
Yeah.
If he's comfortable doing it, then I'm with you. If this is what I got, I will use it now. And then, you know what? If we have to figure it out in September or whatever, if it becomes – then we'll figure it out in September. Hopefully by then Manoah's back.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully by then I've got a little more – I've got a little more weapons to work with.
And I can use Bowden Francis the way I want to use him, and I can hide his issue, which is fastball command. That's his thing, right? You know, I think they sort of graduated away from a certain pitch, your stuff goes down. Velocity may go down. Break may suffer. I think they're past that. I think now it's, if you refine, like, if I want to go down early and count to a lefty, I need to be able to do that. If I want to go up with two strikes to a righty to eliminate with power on my fastball, I need to be able to do that. They can hide that by using him here. Because he's a big leaguer. He's not a minor leaguer anymore. Putting him back in the minor leagues is useless. They want to use him here, right? So if you got Rodriguez starting, and then you want to bridge it to your highest leverage guys to win a baseball game that way, because now you can use Bowden Francis for more than one inning, and you're not using him second time through. I think that's what it is, right? You can get two innings from him one time through, instead of trying to get four innings from him two times through, which is a lot to ask when he's having trouble with fastball command. So now, again, it's just, this is why Pete Walker, in my mind, is the best pitching coach in baseball. It's just, when you talk to him and he's got this nice toy that's doing the things that Rodriguez can, when do you change it? You got to be careful with that. So I'm sure Petey will do the right thing, and we'll see Yariel doing things that is special, I think.
I want to ask you this again. So you've got two relievers coming back.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll be back this series, but you've got two relievers coming back.
Yeah.
Who do you send down out of this bullpen?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would think.
And you know you don't have any options on Mitch White.
Yeah, I don't think that matters anymore. I mean, that's, you know, who's your obvious guys, right? It's Chad Green. It's Jimmy Garcia. It's Tim Meza. It's Cabrera. Hennessy Cabrera. So how many is that?
Trevor
One,
Richards.
Two, three, four. Trevor Richards, that's five.
Nate Pearson?
That's a good question. So six, seven would be your other two guys.
Yeah. This is where it gets interesting. If Nate, because you're probably going to see Nate against the Yankees because they used him against Judge with a certain amount of success. Then it gets interesting. Like, what do you do with Nate? Do you send Nate down to AAA and say, you're the closer? I don't know.
Yeah, look, I think because he has options, that would be the easiest choice.
Wow.
But look, again, you got your two guys. It does seem to me like that will be a little bit away because it doesn't sound like Jordan Romano's right there yet.
Okay.
Swanson sounds like he's closer.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it sounds just like the velocity's a little off. It's a little moody, but it looks like the split finger's doing things.
He looks like a guy who hasn't had a lot of spring training as opposed to a guy who's hurt.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know. I think that split finger's real hard on the arm, boy. I think that's what it is. And then when you add heart rate to it and you're asking him to get really tough lefties out, it's just a lot to ask. So I do think there's room for, you know, them to move around and sort of fill in the right pieces. But that last spot is very intriguing, right? It is, you know, would it be a Bowden Francis? I'm assuming that probably the way they go, right? You don't need a couple of long relief guys because now you got Trevor Richards could give you more than one inning. So it's about options. It's about who you don't care to get rid of. I think the Mitch White thing's over for me. Who cares if you lose him?
You know what?
DFA him, so he goes to somebody else. I mean, I got other guys. Now that Yariel Rodriguez is here, like, I got other guys. You know, Alec Manoah will be here soon. Like, you could use him in a Mitch White role. But, like, there's ways you could make up for it. If you have better arms and Mitch White's not one of them, sorry about your luck.
Yeah. This guy's got – he doesn't have nine lives. This cat's got like 1,000 lives. And I mean, I'm with you completely. I think the answer is obvious. But clearly, there's somebody in that organization who thinks that they've got something with Mitch White. And, you know, they've invested. This is the thing. And they've invested a lot of time and a lot of energy in this guy.
Yeah, I think that's more. I think you should give him credit for that. The people that I've talked to said that's more about him. Because at the end of the season, they were basically writing him off. His stuff wasn't real good. He couldn't get a righty out. Like, if you're right-handed, you can't get a righty out. You're not a big leaguer. And then he sort of refined that. He got a better grip on the breaking ball. He's throwing harder. You know, he's changed the weight program and the things that tried to make him throw a little harder more consistently. So you give him credit for that. It's just, do I have other guys that are better in those spots? And the answer to that, because of what my offense is not doing, is 100% yes. So I think sometimes, and give the organization credit, Jeff, you know this as well as anybody. They're not afraid to get rid of guys because other guys are better, especially when it comes to the pitching side of the ball.
No, it's come, and it's funny, and this is where I always kind of remind myself, all right, I have to kind of pull in the reins a bit. They got rid of guys like Brian Baker. They got rid of guys like Jason Adam. I understand every team in the league, you're going to make a call on a pitcher. It's not going to turn out right. They're going to go someplace else and boom. But they have, in recent years, let guys go, and those guys have turned into something. And I understand. You take a chance with that. That's why I really – Mal, I'll tell you what. I'd love to be in the discussion when they make the decision. I'd love to be in the discussion.
But I think a lot of it's performance driven, like that you sort of you give the player what you think they need.
And he's had opportunities. Mitch White's had opportunities.
Yeah, again, I think this is what they see their team not being able to do, right? I mean, we just talked about this. They ain't gonna win a bunch of 13-1 games. They're gonna win a lot more 5-3 games. And you need guys that John can go to that he doesn't have to overthink it. And quite frankly, when everything's said and done, when you use Mitch, probably when the game's out of hand, one way or the other.
Yep.
Do you really need that guy in the pen, right? So it's you use him early, you don't need him anymore. If he clears, he clears. If he doesn't, that's probably where Alec Manoah will be.
7:07 is the first pitch tonight. Jays and Yankees, first of a 3-game series. We're going to take a break and come back, continue our discussion. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The
most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is Jackie Robinson today around Major League Baseball. Everybody wearing uniform number 42. We also had an early game, the Cleveland Guardians against the Boston Red Sox. Do you happen to see that collision with Tyler O'Neill and Rafael Devers?
Uh-oh.
Tyler O'Neill left the game, got 8 stitches. But I was thinking, I'm watching the game, our producer Mark Boffel, we're going, is there a guy you'd less want to collide with?
Probably.
Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
if you're a Red Sox fan, too, I mean, you don't have a ton to cheer for.
No, you're holding your breath.
Devers, yeah, you want to.
You're holding your breath.
Hopefully he's okay.
But that is a, yeah, that's, those are, Tyler O'Neill, something else, man. He's having, I'll tell you what, the St. Louis Cardinals now, I'm watching. Tyler O'Neill was more established than Randy Arozarena. I get that. But if you're the St. Louis Cardinals, you've got a history of giving up on outfielders that have come back.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Cardinals. Yeah, I think the corner's gotten a little old, you know, offensively hitting the fastballs and that kind of thing, right? You're seeing some guys having to, you know, cheat to get to certain things, and quadrants are eliminated before you even walk to the plate. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think that whole behind-the-scenes thing, there's something up with the Cardinals.
There is.
That just—it's odd.
We
that the Cardinals.
That. We talked about that last year with the manager and O'Neill, and there's a weird kind of vibe.
I don't believe in that most of the time, but I don't think you can argue that with the Cardinals. Something's going on there.
Yeah,
I don't think the GM's real good either. I don't think that helps.
No, the Guardians. Yeah. Guardians, by the way, beat the Red Sox.
Think the Cardinals never blow it up? I mean, it's the Central. Would you even have to blow it up?
Really not the Cardinal way.
Do they even have a way anymore?
I mean, I'm looking, you
know. What is their way?
Look at that team. Arenado, Goldschmidt. I just don't think they're that good anymore. I think it's that simple.
I
don't think they're that good anymore.
Yeah, I think they had something used to hang their hat on, right? Good base running, good defense.
Yeah.
They'd pitch. They had a good bullpen. You know, they had some dudes that hit some homers.
I still take Lars Nootbaar in my team.
Ah. Jay's got a bunch of those.
So 6-0, the Guardians beat the Red Sox made another.
The Guardians.
Error. The Red Sox made another error today. They're horrible.
Defensively, they are.
They're horrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's one
are
of the.
Are the Jays still in last place?
No, I don't know. I don't look at the standings.
You should.
No, I don't look at the standings. That's one of the worst fielding teams I've seen ever. I will just say that the Boston Red Sox, they are bad.
Especially who their manager is.
Now,
again, I don't know how much the manager has to do with that, but you would think conversations between the manager and who's running that part of it. And maybe just sometimes the talent's just not good enough. Like you can say the right message, give the right message, and beat the right message into a bunch of players that probably aren't capable of going out and executing that. That's sure what it seems like, right?
And I'll tell you,
up the middle defense, where's that at?
That is, you know what? That's a bad ballpark to have as your home ballpark and be a bad defensive team.
It is, right?
It really
is. Giving up extra outs in there can cost you, boy.
The Jays lineup for tonight, George Springer leading off in right field. Vladdy is at first.
Well, I mean, how many times you got to?
I don't know what the hell's going on. Yeah. Bo Bichette is at short. I truly don't. I honest to God, this is turning.
Every single time you read that.
This is turning into a Randy Hundley, Todd Hundley thing where I would always call Todd Hundley, Randy Hundley, his dad's name. And it's the same thing, Barry Bobby Bonds, same thing happened. And now I've got Vladimir Guerrero at third base.
Why don't you write it down?
It is written down. He's at first base tonight. Bichette is at short. Turner is the DH. Kevin Biggio is at second. Alejandro Kirk, he's still behind the plate. Oh, everyday Alejandro is now we call him. Dalton Varsho, he's back in left field. You can all rest easy. Isaiah Kiner-Falefel, is at third base.
Boy.
Kevin Kiermaier is in center field.
You butchered about 3 of them names somehow.
Yeah, I'm tired today, man.
Are you
I'm tired today? Do you really? I am trying.
Oh, no, are you trying?
I'm tired.
Like
standings, your Toronto Blue Jays are still in last place according to the standings. I need to clean that up.
Like, I mean,
no, the Yankees do not have their lineup out.
No.
So Danny Jansen's back. He's not in the lineup tonight. Probably not a great surprised he played.
Bassett coming off a good start. Kirk catching him. Yeah. You know, he's starting to throw hard. The quadrants getting on the same page. You know, again, I wonder how the Bassett-Danny Jansen thing would work with a couple of ticks off the pitch clock. Like, I wonder, you know, you got to get – there's got to be like a rhythm thing there, right? You got to think ahead a couple pitches. Like, there's a lot happening. So you would think that Kirk-Bassett thing would continue to happen?
I guess the good thing about not having a strict lefty-righty catching platoon is because you got both righties, you can, you know, you can start – You can pair Kirk with Bassett if you want. I mean, it's not like it's going to throw your entire lineup into
imbalance. I don't think we should continue to hear either that they're happy with Kirk's conditioning and he can handle.
I'm going to ask you the same.
Numbers don't lie.
I'm going to ask you the same question. Okay,
just tell us that numbers don't lie.
I'm going to ask you that depends on the numbers. Some numbers do lie, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Hard hit percentage on the ground of the pool side. Yeah, I mean, they could spin that thing any way they want to spin it to tell you how good it is. But sometimes things are cut and dry. A buck 80 is a buck 80, Jeff.
All right.
Okay?
Alejandro Kirk. True or false?
I don't like this game.
True or false?
This gets me in trouble.
No, it doesn't. True or false?
You know, there's some sensitive players on that
thing. Stop it. True or false? After what you've seen so far, Alejandro Kirk is a backup catcher.
Of course. Oh, man. I mean, you just launched that over here, didn't you? A backup catcher?
Okay.
Okay, here's how I'll answer
that.
No,
okay, backup catcher is wrong.
No, I'll answer.
Two out of six.
No.
Okay,
I think they have to have an equal amount because one has a tough time staying on the field.
All right.
And the other one, he's on the field too much, is not any good. It has to be. It has to go hand in hand. Yeah. I ain't riding the fence.
Okay,
I'm just telling the truth.
All right.
Okay.
So let's,
how's that?
Here.
One's catching four games. The other's catching three games. Right, how's that?
Here's what we're gonna do. We are going
to. I can't believe you'd ask me that.
We are going to do whatever we can. Positive vibes only.
That is positive.
Healthy Danny Jansen for the rest of the year.
I just told you.
Yeah. Okay. Just healthy Danny Jansen for the rest of the year. All right.
Yeah.
How many starts does Kirk make every five games? Healthy Danny Jansen.
No, not every five games. There's 7 days in a week. They play Saturday and Sunday.
7 days a week.
I mean,
okay, how many?
I'm thinking
one turn through the rotation, but if you want to.
If Danny Jansen's hitting home runs in a lot of homers in a week, he's playing 5 days out of the seven. I think this is fluid. I think that's the word for the catching situation. It's fluid.
Are you surprised we've seen the extra base hit?
No.
Just vanish for
Kirky? Again, numbers don't lie. They can spin that like, you know, however they want to spin it. When you're hitting a certain number and you are slugging a certain number.
This guy was a Silver Slugger Award winner a couple of years ago.
And the league's adjusted to you. Maybe he had a good year.
How much of it is that the league's adjusted to him?
I think it's his conditioning. I think when, you know, you play a lot behind the plate, you know, the standing, the squatting, and your conditioning is what your conditioning is. Is that a nice way for me to say all those things you just asked me? Because I know what you're trying to do there.
I'm not trying to do anything.
I know what you're trying to do, and I will not fall into your trap.
What was I trying to do?
Barry Kirky, and I will not do that. I will not.
I think
what you've seen is if he has a day off, play, that the at-bats tend to get better the more days off. The more days he plays consistently, the at-bats go down. Him trying to hit velocity is a no-no. So, yeah, it's not his fault. Like, it's just sort of what they've been throwing him into. And Jones came on our show and said, it's his job to put the player in the best position that you see the best out of him. They've had no choice. Nobody's ever heard of serving until he made the team, right? No offense, but I said sometimes you just got to play a guy because the other guy ain't real good consistently. And I think that's sort of, you know, again, this gets back to that. They are a run-preventing team, and they're going to go a lot of the ways depending on how good their rotation is and how good that pin is, and they'd rather have the guy pushing the right button and stealing, you know, tricking that guy that stands behind him.
You know who we haven't talked about? And I feel
I've talked about him. You have not.
I feel guilty.
This is sort of Kevin Biggio all over again. You know that, right?
Well, it's not really.
It really is.
Well, it's not really.
It's not this guy's fault that they gave him $15 million.
Well, I was going to say, very pleasantly surprised by what I've seen from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa right now.
You know what they always said? Marquise Grissom used to always tell me this. If you're not going to play every day, boy, you better learn how to hit the heater. IKF's hitting 333 off the fastball. 8 of his 13 hits have come off the fastball. His one homer he's hit, off the fastball. That's what you have to do. Short and quick, think the other way. If I can learn how to, as a not-everyday player, take velocity to the opposite field, pull the breaking ball, that will give me a chance to be a decent offensive player. That's what you're saying.
Are you surprised at how – I'm not going to talk about his numbers, but are you surprised at how he has been able – if you look at his games, he's contributed a lot to – this team to rallies this team when this team is grinding out and getting runs and putting runs on the board, he's contributed to that.
Yeah, I think he's out of New York. I mean, he got destroyed in New York, right? Playing short and wasn't real good.
Yeah, the manager, but the manager, I mean, manager loved him. People
defensively,
loved him.
Not people. I mean,
well, people around the team,
not fans of the Yankees. I mean, he took a beating there. Like, I think maybe getting away from that, hitting at the bottom of the order, you know, not a ton of expectations. Like, you know, he's a really good defender. He's playing third instead of short.
Yeah, he's
some of the time, like, he's playing second instead of short. You know, he played left or center instead of short. Like, I don't think he's a shortstop per se all the time. And maybe that'll help his offense mentally. Mm-hmm. And I just think him buying into, you know, if I can be balanced because my bat is quick enough and think hitting the fastball the other way, that will allow me not to look silly on breaking balls. And I mean, I think that's a good approach.
He's come as advertised defensively at third base.
I think we do that. You know? I mean, I listen to this
and
show.
At second base too.
That's the first thing that I think that we've told people is they're not going to suffer defensively. They won't. I know Chapman, and he was good at third. This guy can pick it. And he's a, you know, picking and a grinning over there. It's just offensively, everybody was like, you give this guy $15 million to do what? When offensively, their lineup hasn't been real good, and that's the ad? That's not his fault. And for him to make some adjustments, you know, he does have a flat bat path. It's flat. There ain't uppercut in it. That'll allow him to hit 333, 8 of the 13 hits off the fastball. At least it gives you a chance to have success. If you have an uppercut and you're not an everyday player, that disrupts timing. The timing with an uppercut has to be on point.
See,
and if it's not, you fail, you look silly, people boo you, and then everybody's yelling, screaming, nice job, Ross, for giving him $15 million. And now all of a sudden he's made some adjustments, you know, and he looks decent offensively.
When that contract was signed, I don't have an issue with that contract, provided you added somebody else. That's the thing.
If they had
added a guy and then said, oh, by the way, we're giving Isaiah Kiner-Falefa $15 million for 2 years,
yeah,
I would have been okay with that.
Good defense. We like that. Yeah,
I mean, he doesn't give you offensively what Whit Merrifield gave you offensively, but defensively he's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, again, they're a run-preventing team. Like, they're going to have to catch every ball. And they've been doing that lately. Right, the two things go hand in hand. You start throwing more strikes, you know, you throw less pitches an inning. Dudes are on their toes a little bit more. First move side to side. Look how many good plays they're making in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
That's jumps, right? They're always on their toes because pitchers are throwing strikes now. Like, it goes hand in hand. If only they start hitting homers, Jeff.
Yeah.
Which I'm just not sure, and that's what's going to make it hard. How do you dig yourself out of the cellar in the American League East? For me, you got to power your way out sometimes. Can they do that?
Have you seen anything?
No.
You know where I'm going with this.
Yes, no. It's a pretty big sample size. And then you got the actual hitting coach telling everybody they ain't a home run hitting team.
No, I was talking about Vladdy. I was going to say, have you seen anything at all, that, or is this like 2023 all over again for him?
I'm going to talk about Vladdy like he's a good hitter, not a great hitter. I used to get myself out like Vladdy does. I mean, don't say it like
no,
that.
No, I'm not.
But, yeah, I mean, I joke about that, but it is like Groundhog Day. Why?
I'm not insulting. I'm saying that's a pretty.
Why can an average big league pitcher consistently get him out the same way? Why? Until they answer that question, we will continue to talk about Vladdy as a good hitter, not a great hitter. I can't sugarcoat. We're done sugarcoating stuff. Like, it is what it is. Today, Gil will go hard stuff away, soft stuff in. What are you going to do about it? If you're a great hitter, you fix that. You overcome that. If you're a good hitter, you ground out the third once, you fly out to right. Maybe your fly out's a double instead of a fly out. That's what I'm talking about. Why do we not see that? The great hitters don't consistently let you get them out the same way over and over and over again. They just don't. They figure it out. Well, why do we not see that from him? That's so I was in that, right? I was that machine, Albert Pujols, 330 and 100. I was the first one to raise my hand and say, we ain't seen a right-handed hitter like this in a while.
Yeah, you were.
But then you start seeing it consistently look like this. Maybe it's just not what the Blue Jays are not doing for him. Maybe it's just not in the tank. Sometimes hard to hear. I'm not saying he ain't got it talent-wise, because he's got everything you need. But it's just mentally and mechanically, why, Jeff? Like, why is it it's a big sample size of this. Like, why? That's not, and they've done everything. They've moved him in the order. Like, they're doing everything they can possibly do now to, they put Turner behind him. Like, there's no excuses anymore that you ain't getting pitches. Wait, they put Bo behind him. Yep. Even better. Like, yep. A contact guy that used the entire field. Like, they put good hitters behind him. Now it's up to him to prove us wrong. Prove us wrong if you're that good.
So we mentioned Alejandro Kirk starts today. Danny Jansen is back with the team. I guess the first thing we'll look for when Jano comes up to the plate is how much stuff he's wearing on his arms and his hands.
He won't play for me if he didn't have it on. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care how much you're wearing. Wear it. You're a turn and burn guy. On top of the plate. If I'm a pitcher, you've shrunk my strike zone, and I got to throw you in now because I'd rather you pull that thing way foul. And if you can mechanically be sound enough and short and quick enough to keep that fair, but I have to pitch you a certain way. You got to wear all that stuff.
Is it easier or harder for a guy like that to come back off an injury?
It's hard to do. Well, it's getting away from this, right? It's one thing to hit homers and doubles in the minor leagues. They'll go away from you and miss down the middle. These dudes aren't going to do that. They're going to crowd him, make him move his feet. Like, they're all going to pitch to him in there.
Yeah, and if you're facing the Yankees, you're getting Carlos Rodon and then Marcus Stroman.
Lefty in there. So it's got to catch it out front. You got to be mechanically sound. You got to use your lower half. Like, it will be short and quick. Like, there's a lot of things got to happen. He's got to get past that mental hurdle first, right? First time he has to stand up and get out of a ball that's really close to him. How does he handle that? Get right back in there. How dare you? Because I'm wearing all this stuff. It ain't gonna hurt.
I will be.
It ain't gonna hurt.
I will be interested in seeing.
He better.
Seeing if he looks like the Michelin Man or something like that.
We had John on in spring training. The first thing out of his mouth when I asked him was, "He'll be wearing that now."
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they can't afford to lose him. They've seen how it looks when he ain't on the team. So
absence
is a big
deal
for them.
Absence does make the heart grow fonder in the case.
And I root for him. I know we're not supposed to.
It's his birthday today.
He's a really good dude. Yeah, happy birthday. He's a really nice guy. He's always been really good to us.
Yeah.
And he helps this team a lot.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And
he brings a threat of just cracking concrete in left field. Who else has that?
He's another guy who
he'd be hitting fifth for me, too.
Pardon me?
He'd be hitting fifth for me, too.
I think.
Kevin Biscio, scary. I love Kevin. You know, I'm the first guy to raise my hand and take up for Kevin. Is that oozing fear? I mean, you have all the six pitch at bats you want. I don't think you can hit a home run to right center off me.
The plan would be to have Danny.
Danny can.
Although, again, if you do that, now you're looking five righties.
Does it? I mean, I think they're past that because of who they're counting on. You know, they would love to stick a Dalton Varsho between all them righties.
I might stick with Biggio and go with Jano in the sixth spot, you know?
We'll see.
Five righties in a row is kind of.
You have to pitch them all differently, though. Turner's tough. You know, Bo, you got to throw off speed stuff. Vladdy, you can get him out in with soft stuff. You know, Springer's got to be better at not swinging at the ball in. Like, you got to pitch him differently. So they're sort of different ways, and they act like different kind of hitters. But I'm with you. I mean,
you know what? It's been a real good story, by the way, too. Have you seen some of the numbers the dudes at AAA are putting up for the Bisons? Barger, Martinez.
Martinez hit a homer yet?
I don't know if he's hit a homer. The Bargers put up some real good power numbers. One of the other names to keep an eye on down there, of course, is Ricky Tiedemann. And he's going to join us tomorrow at 2:30 p.m.
Awesome.
We will have Ricky Tiedemann on. Ricky Tiedemann of the Buffalo Bisons.
That's it for us. 7 o'clock's first pitch tonight, first of three against the Yankees. We'll be doing Blue Jays Talk after
Winning
edition of Blue Jays Talk. We'll be back here tomorrow as well from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Sportsnet, enjoy the baseball. Enjoy your afternoon. Enjoy your evening. And enjoy the rest of the day.